Welcome to the Kawartha Small Business Podcast, where we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small business. I'm Brian Rump from Profit Coach.
And I'm Matt Garrity from Managing Digital.
We are recording from the Thrive Podcast Studio at Thrive Coworking Community, 18 Kent Street West in downtown Lindsay. And with us today, we have John Carr, who is with the WSIB. And we are going to have a conversation about safety and WSIB and all sorts of cool small business stuff. John, thanks for coming. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is John Carr. I've been a resident of Lindsay or in the Kawartha Lakes for pretty much my entire life. Started out back in the day working on safety at Fleetwood. So anybody who's been around Lindsay area for a while, remember when Fleetwood manufactured travel trailers and RVs over on Mount Hope Street. And I got started in safety there and then kind of transitioned into a career with WSIB after I learned a little bit about safety in the actual real world in the manufacturing environments.
Oh, that's really cool. I think, safety is one of those things that we just don't really talk about very often, I think, in small business. Mm-hmm. And, before the podcast started, and we'll get into it, some kind of stats a bit, but I think we take some of it for granted. Or I often think of, people might think of, how do we do the big things so people don't, get majorly injured? But even something like, if I'm working at Fleetwood and I put a nail through my thumb, I can't work and you kind of lose all that productivity. So there's all these probably little things.
And with small businesses, that actually gets compounded because in a big operation like Fleetwood, where there's 500 people, if one person gets hurt, it's one out of 500.
Yeah.
If you're a small operation and you only have 3, 4, or 5 people, and one of those people is hurt and can't work, that's a significant impact on your business, right? So there's a big focus that WSIB has on trying to help small businesses. Because as you say, kind of, it's not on the radar for a lot of small businesses. It's not a big area of focus. I try to talk to businesses about kind of the why. Why should health and safety actually be important to your business? And one of the things that we need to recognize is that health and safety is one thing on the plate of a small business. And we ask ourselves kind of, why don't companies invest in health and safety? Why don't small businesses make the choice to invest in health and safety? There's a lot of different kind of factors that small businesses have to take into account when they're looking at kind of day-to-day operations, right? So what happens if you don't pay your employees?
They leave. They don't work for you anymore.
What happens if you don't pay your rent?
I get kicked out.
What happens if you don't buy raw materials or products or services that you need?
Can't run our business, can't build the product.
Right. What happens if you don't invest in health and safety?
I don't know what that answer is. I think someone gets hurt.
I think nothing right away.
Maybe, right? It's not a guaranteed negative impact where those other things, if I don't pay my rent, I don't pay my employees, I don't buy products or services that I need to do my business, guaranteed negative outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Health and safety is like, somebody might get hurt. So is that one of the reasons maybe that people don't choose it, don't see it as important as those other things when it comes to kind of the day-to-day. So that's part of the discussion that we try to have with businesses to say, why should health and safety be important?
I think as you talk about that, we talk about the simple 3-step plan a lot when I go in as a story brand guide, and people don't like walking into a fog or an unknown. And I think health and safety is one of those categories where everyone gets a little bit scared. And then when you even say invest in health and safety, I'm like, well, what does that mean? How much is that going to cost me? Whereas I would bet the reality might be, what that means isn't, $1 million. But people just don't do it because they're just afraid of kind of opening that can of worms.
Yeah, there's not sure what they're getting into. There's definitely a lot of unknown, right?
Yeah.
And one of the challenges that we've seen, I'd say, over the last 20 years, especially with, the internet, obviously, that there's a ton of information out there, but people don't know what's the right thing. Yeah. What do I actually have to do versus what should I do, and kind of what's the law require me to do versus kind of what's a best practice. And, you know, we try to guide people to kind of, here's the basic things that you need to cover. I always have this discussion with businesses, and it doesn't matter whether you're small or big. If you're the person who's trying to kind of make a decision whether health and safety should be important, and you're trying to maybe convince the owner of the business, or you're trying to convince your business partner or whatever that, hey, we need to spend some of our time and our money and our resources on this. Part of that discussion is, what do I get back for, right? What's the return on my investment into health and safety? And it's always been a challenge with health and safety to kind of put numbers around that, to say, if I throw $5,000 at machine guarding or training or, you know, whatever new piece of equipment or whatever it happens to be that I categorize as safety, what am I getting back from that? And health and safety has never been one of those things where you could say, I invest $5,000, I'm going to get 10 back, or I'm going to invest $5 and I'm only going to lose $4. You know, like, to even put any sort of numbers around it is hard, because you're trying to prevent something negative from happening. So I could throw $5,000 at training or whatever it happens to be and see zero return on that $5,000. But did I prevent somebody from getting hurt, which potentially could have cost me a lot more money? There's a lot of intangibles there, and that makes it a hard kind of thing for people to quantify. It's an unknown, right?
Yeah, it's one of those cool ones where it's like, if it works, nobody knows about it, and you don't think it worked, or you're just not sure. So you have to, try to make those decisions and avoid what you can. And then I'm sure if you see, you know, something happens at another shop or somewhere, you know, then people suddenly will make the investment at their place, because they now can see, oh, this happened. Yeah. That would be really bad.
If the contractors are, you know, at the coffee shop talking to their buddies or their fellow contractors, and they get into the conversation about, you know, here's some of the crap I'm dealing with, you know, I had an injury happen, and here's how it's impacting me and kind of the hassles that I'm dealing with. And there's a lot of things that are not kind of tangible costs, but as a small business owner, you look at how valuable is your time, right? If you're the main kind of input into your business, the success of your business, how valuable is your time? So if you're spending time dealing with, you know, an injury that occurred, you're dealing with WSIB. Not that we're not great people to deal with, but that's something that you're not, if you're spending time talking to us, you're not talking to somebody who's helping you make money or be successful. You're dealing with, you know, the medical system, doctor's notes. You're dealing with potentially the Ministry of Labor if they get involved, if something serious were to happen. So there's a lot of things where you're saying, kind of, how big of a time waster could this be if I don't do the things that I need to do, right?
I just think of, in any business, you know, one of the core concepts is profit is made in the margins. So that's the little extra things we do above and beyond where kind of most of our profit comes from, beyond our core activities. If we're not even getting our core activities efficient and right, then it's just a drag on the company. And when you go into, or when I go into most businesses, there's always this like a whole bunch of series of little things that are just dragging the company down, and they can't quite get to that fully operation. So if we think of, you know, WSIB and our business with 5 employees, and, you know, 2 of them have a sore arm because of something they were doing wrong, it might not be a WSIB claim, but now those 2 people aren't working hard enough that week, or not getting as much done. And that just drags the business down a little bit. And when that stuff keeps popping up, that's why you're not making profit. It's like, you know, you feel like you're doing good, but at the end of the year, you break even or lose a bit of money. But if you dug in, maybe that series of little safety things might have just made everyone perform more consistently.
And one of the key things I find with small businesses is that they tend to have key people that are integral to the success of their business. And if you take that person or those people out of the equation, it can really have an impact on your business's ability to be successful. So if that person, as you say, now who is a key to success, can't do their regular job because of a work-related injury or work-related illness, how's that impact your ability to be successful? You might be doing everything else right, But if that you take that one piece out because that person is not able to perform, now you just are never able to get to that success level, right? And so look at things like, you know, do people understand what the law actually requires them to do? I've always talked to businesses about kind of, again, back to the why. There's two reasons why you should invest in health and safety. One is you don't want people to get hurt. At the end of the day, you don't want the people who work for you to get hurt or the people that work with you to get hurt. The other reason is you want to put your company in kind of the best possible position. And part of that consideration is legal requirements. Am I doing everything that the law requires me to do? And a lot of cases, people just don't know. This is a lot of rules and regulations that you have to follow out there.
They're afraid to start looking in case.
Just in case, right? In case I didn't realize, oh, I'm not doing the things that I need to do. Now what do I need to do to play catch up? Or how much is that going to cost me to actually get into a position of compliance? So a lot of people are kind of frightened by even having that discussion.
Yeah.
And they're frightened to, you know, sometimes frightened to call somebody like me because what does that open up? What can of worms am I opening up if I ask the government for help? You know, the guy from the government's here to help. Does that now expose me to other potential issues, other potential regulatory bodies? Now, am I going to get audited by somebody? You know, is somebody going to come to my workplace and then do an inspection because I called John and asked for some help? There's always some, you know, little trepidation there about kind of, do I want to do that? So,
do you? Does that open a can of worms?
It doesn't. Well, not for us. I mean, if you were to call the Ministry of Labor, and that's actually, there's one of the things in government, we're always changing names of stuff. So Ministry of Labor has added a couple of more portfolios over the last couple of years. So it's actually the Ministry of Labor Immigration Training and Skills Development now. Doesn't kind of roll off your tongue kind of like Ministry of Labor does. So we tend to still use that. And the Ministry of Labor are the kind of the arm that's responsible for the law side of health and safety, writing the regulations and then enforcing it. We don't have a direct connection to the Ministry of Labor. So if someone calls us and says, hey, I need some guidance, I need some help, I need some support, we don't then turn around and pick up the phone and call the Ministry of Labor inspector and say, hey, I was just talking to ABC company, you need to go out and inspect them. Because first of all, we don't have that connection. Second of all, that's not productive from our point of view. Obviously, if I was out at a workplace and I see something that is catastrophic, where there's impending doom about to happen, I may contact the ministry and say, hey, you know, I'm really concerned. But that would be a very, very rare circumstance. Our role is really in the promotion of health and safety. I'm going to take a step back. We started out, we jumped right into it without giving kind of any preface. So everybody knows the Workplace Safety and Insurance Board, so WSIB, for the claims side of our business. They kind of understand WSIB is related to claims that happen for people who get hurt at work. We also have a mandate to promote health and safety, and people don't realize there's actually a small division at WSIB whose role it is to promote health and safety. And that's the area that I work in. So I don't deal directly with the claims side of it at all. I only get the kind of the stats to say, you know, how are companies performing, and using that information as an indicator of who might I want to talk about their health and safety performance, because there might be an opportunity for improvement or an opportunity to kind of give them some guidance and point them in the right direction. We also manage a few programs that help companies, so some incentive programs. So we have a program right now called the Health and Safety Excellence Program, offers businesses some incentives, some rebates on the premiums if they actually take action and make investments in health and safety. So small division of WSIB, but designed to really kind of help companies and prevent injuries from happening in the first place.
I think that's a good step back, because I was not wondering the same thing, but frankly, like, up until today, I had no idea WSIB did anything other than just deal with the claims. And that's the part you don't want to deal with. I think anytime I've been employed, I've had to sign some sort of form that obviously I never read. And like that was the extent of my knowledge at WSIB. So it's interesting to know that they're out there actually consulting, advising, promoting health and safety. So
what's a good example of a, like when we talk about investing in health and safety, what does that mean? Because I think it feels like this big thing. But if I'm a five-person operation and you're trying to convince me to invest, what's just some examples of what that could mean and look like?
Do you mean cost or?
Or just, we use the word.
Yeah. What's the word invest actually mean like, when it comes to health and safety?
In yourself.
Government investment of $100,000 or like what is it? Yeah.
I always talk about investment being time, money, and resources, right? So as a small business owner, you've got a limited amount of time, money, and resources available to
definitely.
You. So investing those. So it might be actually purchasing goods or services. It might be paying for training. So let's say you've got a small contracting business. You are a roofing company, for example. Your employees work at heights. So part of ensuring that they work safely is ensuring that they have the appropriate training to work at heights, investing in the safety equipment, harnesses, ropes, all the protective equipment that they might wear. So there's actually kind of that expenditure of money to buy goods and services to make your workplace safer. Investment of time and resources. So it might be actually sitting down and writing a policy or procedure or doing some research and figuring out kind of what do I actually need to do and saying, do I need a procedure that my people are going to follow? So that takes time to do that. And in a lot of cases, we find with small businesses, what they tend to do is to say, I'd rather spend money than time. I have more money available to me in some cases, then I have time available to me, and I don't have the area of expertise to actually sit down and write a safety procedure, so I'll pay somebody else to do that. And there's tons of businesses out there that act as kind of third-party consultants that offer those types of services for training, policy writing, and stuff like that. And also taking the time out of your day. So let's say you determine that your people need training. Well, they can't work and train at the same time. So you either have to pay them overtime to go to training or take them away from the job that they're doing during the day. So that's an investment in your business to say, you know, I'm not going to be productive for these 2 hours today because we're doing training. So that's how I would kind of categorize investments. It's not only buying stuff, but it's taking people away, investing their time into training or doing what we call like toolbox talks, where we would sit down as a team and we would talk about an issue so that we're all on the same page and we understand how to do our job safely or we address a concern or something. So that's kind of what I mean by investment.
Yeah, and I think just talking about that helps give us some context to make it less scary.
Yeah.
What's an example of, I always like to look beyond the kind of core legislation. So if I'm a business, I know sometimes we do things because, you know, the law is chasing us. I would say you want to go beyond that. So give an example of like maybe a health and safety investment that you know someone who's made that's kind of beyond that, just that bare minimum, you know, compliance.
Yeah. So there are some basic things that everybody needs to do. And there are some laws that apply depending on how big your business is. So typically, there's not a whole lot of health and safety regs for companies that have five people or less. Then kind of things kick in from a legislative point of view at about five employees up to 19. That's where you have to have a health and safety rep. So there's some things that you need to do. And then once you get 20 or more, you have to actually have a safety committee. So there's things that are laid out for different businesses depending on the size. But one of the things that I really encourage companies to do that kind of goes above and beyond, kind of gets to the next step. If I ask you the question, how do we prevent people from getting hurt? Just generally speaking, how do you prevent somebody from getting hurt?
I think about my kids and I have to tell them constantly how not to get hurt. So that's how I would prevent other people from getting hurt, constantly telling them what not to do.
So when we look at kind of the health and safety lingo, what do we call that? Telling somebody what to do to not get hurt. We call it a control. Mm. So we've identified what the problem is. Then we actually figure out, is that actually a real problem or not? So attach some sort of priority to it to say, is it significant or not? And then figure out what the controls are. And you know, so that whole process of identifying hazards in your workplace, prioritizing those hazards based upon the level of risk associated with them, and then coming up with controls is probably the single most important things companies can do to actually prevent people from getting hurt. Because in a lot of cases, people get hurt because of things that haven't been identified, things that are just kind of like, oh, we didn't realize that could happen, or I didn't think about, you know, somebody slipping and falling, or I didn't think that that kind of thing could happen in my workplace. And in most cases, once something does happen, we learn from that experience and we kind of take action so that it doesn't happen again. But we want to do that proactively to prevent that injury from ever happening in the first place. So I would certainly encourage companies, if you don't do anything else related to health and safety other than, you know, meet your bare legal requirements, is kind of analyze your business by looking at the jobs people do, figure out how people could get hurt, then come up with appropriate controls to prevent people from having those injuries in the first place. Now, that's kind of health and safety 101, but really that's what it boils down to, is, you know, understanding your business and then preventing people from getting hurt by those things. So.
And with health and safety, I think more often than not with industry and a lot harder working guys than me in certain cases, like contractors and roofers.
In
and
certain cases or
factories. So like if I'm a retailer or a service-based business like I am, to me, I sometimes tune this out.
Because it's not part of the day-to-day discussion. You know, you're not doing things where you go, oh, I'm doing an activity today that's got risk associated with it, and I'm probably going to get hurt. So you go about your business day to day. You don't really think about your own personal safety or the safety within your shop here. You know, you don't think about that because it's not really, you know, nothing's catastrophic. You don't think about it. Although people can get hurt doing things, you know, especially, you know, what's the number one? What's the number one source of fatalities in Ontario? Fatalities.
Oh, my comment would be human error.
Fatigue. So what type of activity though? What activity leads to the
probably falling?
Driving.
Oh, driving.
Mm. And it's something we all kind of do, not maybe all of us, but most of us do every day. We jump in our vehicle, we drive to our work site, we drive to client visits, we do whatever, we don't even think about it. Right? We just kind of take it for granted. But that's actually a very high risk activity that we all do all the time. What's the second one that's related to that? So I drive here, I park my car in the parking lot, and I walk into work. Well, in the wintertime, slips, trips, and falls from icy parking lots are a high source of injury. Again, we don't really think about it. We don't kind of consider that that's a high risk activity, but we do it every day, right? So those
are terrifying.
So those are the types of things we kind of like have to think about. What do my people do, or what do I do every day that could result in an injury? And we don't want to dwell on the negative. I mean, you can overanalyze everything, and you can kind of be doom and gloom and say, you know, no matter what I do, there's a potential to get hurt. Well, that might actually be true, but to look at the things. Highest probability, what's likely to happen? And then if it were to happen, is there a potential that it could actually cause serious harm?
Yeah.
That's how we kind of prioritize those things to figure out where do we focus our attention, right?
And it is all those little unexpected things. You know, I think of slips and falls. I have a childhood friend she's an orthopedic surgeon and is always talking about her busiest surprise times of the year are in the winter, when it's windy on recycling day, because people are chasing down recycling boxes. And she's like, just don't put your stuff out when it's windy in the winter, because like just huge number of injuries. And she ends up full of surgeries that she's doing.
Well, let's break down a little bit. Okay. So kind of you look at that function and say, okay, that's an example of an activity that's basic, pretty basic, right? Yeah. We all do it, or we all do something similar to it. We don't give it a whole lot of consideration. And part of the reason that people probably get injured is because they don't take it seriously. And so what do? You throw on, you know, whatever footwear you can find.
Your slippers.
Your slippers or whatever. And you're wearing your house coat and you run outside and, you know, it's slippery or whatever. So you're not wearing appropriate footwear. You're not prepared for the weather. You know, all of these things that you didn't really take into consideration. Does that kind of compound the fact that now the weather's bad, it's windy, it's slippery, all of these things? that lead to those, that perfect storm of situations that cause an injury to happen, right? And that's really that logic that we want to apply to all of the things that we do, that, you know, some of these things we take for granted that we do every day, maybe we shouldn't take them for granted. Maybe we should look a little closer at what we do and say, is there something I can do to make this safer? One of the things, you know, we look at health and safety, and there's been a lot of talk over the years about kind of all accidents are preventable, you know, that we're striving for zero accidents. And ultimately, that's the goal. We don't want people to get hurt. We don't want there to be accidents. But we also need to recognize you can't control everything, right? There's only a certain amount of things that are within your control. And that's the big challenge with one like driving is I can only control myself. I can make sure my vehicle's safe. I can make sure I've got good tires, whatever. I can't control the roads. I can't control the other drivers. I can't control pedestrian traffic. There's all these other factors that come into play when I'm driving. Same thing with all of these other circumstances. You know, who owns the parking lot? Who's responsible for making sure it's not slippery? All of these factors that compound it and make health and safety complicated. The more complicated it is, I think the less we want to deal with it, or that we just don't think about it as being an issue.
It is interesting because when you first asked, like, what does it take to, or why don't we invest in health and safety? My immediate thought was, Brian will laugh a little bit, but like, it's a marketing problem. I don't spend money on health and safety because no one's ever asked me to. I've never thought of it. And throughout this whole conversation, I was thinking, I'm like, I have to have insurance for certain things. I have to legally have insurance for certain things. So I do that. Or if we're building a business, we always talk about the key pillars. Like, you have to have marketing. You have to have a bookkeeper, an accountant. You have to have insurance. You have to have sales. And never does health and safety come up. And not why is that, but like, we have to do a better job making it part of like the business ecosystem because it's never talked about.
You know, there's some really good examples of kind of getting things into the kind of social realm of awareness, right? So if you look back and you say, we recognized that people were getting seriously injured in car accidents, you know, going back 50 years ago. And there was a huge campaign to get everybody to wear seatbelts. You know, it became mandatory and we put it in. And, you know, we basically drilled it into everybody that you need to wear your seatbelt when you drive your car. And your kids would like curse you if you jumped in and you started driving and you weren't wearing your seatbelt. Like, it became part of our day-to-day thing.
Yeah.
And then we saw that with smoking, where it kind of became a, you know, a taboo thing that everybody kind of was aware of, and we really pushed it. And there was a lot of marketing around it, and it became kind of a known negative and dramatic improvements. So why can't we do that with health and safety? Why can't we kind of market it to the masses to kind of say, this is important and you need to focus some of your attention on that and maybe some of your money to ensure that people don't get hurt and to make it part of the day-to-day discussion so that when we're working together, if I see you do something that I think is unsafe, I'm going to say, Matt, take a breather, stop. We don't want anybody to get hurt. You know, we need to work together to try to prevent injuries from happening. It's a challenge.
It's such a cultural thing.
So it is, yeah.
Shout out to a friend of the show, Alex, who I do CrossFit with. And he is a funny guy who has spent a life in labor jobs. Mm. And he has a lot of stories, but he does like heavy drilling and it's all over the place. And we joke at CrossFit if someone's putting something away wrong or carrying something funny. It's like safety. Cause he's like talks about safety a lot. Cause he's seen a lot of little accidents or he just knows the impact of like, you know, if your job is moving cement bags, that's really hard. So a little thing, you know, can hurt you and then it compounds and you can kind of gut through it, but then it's going to ruin your career.
Yeah.
So I think, part of that's the culture and some industries have it, but it's, you know, for small businesses, it's really thinking long-term. Like, it's expensive to hire people and train them and find new people. And the benefit of it is if you can keep everyone healthier and performing, you know, close to their peak for a lot longer, that's just a way better way to run the business than constantly dealing with little things or, you know, the big things I think we think about, but it's all of those
businesses do the things that they need to do on a day-to-day basis to keep people from getting seriously hurt.
Yeah.
I think there's a recognition that people go, oh, yeah, I know when we're doing that, we're working at heights, or we're lifting heavy things, or we're using pieces of equipment, that there's a potential for somebody to get hurt. And we do the things that we need to do to try to prevent those bad things from happening. But it's the little things that, you know, kind of we don't think about that can, as you say, kind of become cumulative, and they add up. And maybe, you know, as we talked about earlier, maybe I have a sore shoulder from doing a job repetitively and I don't really give it too much thought. But when it gets to the point where now my shoulder is so sore that I can't lift this thing anymore, now I have to go to my employer and say, hey, I don't think I can lift that thing anymore because my shoulder's too sore. Now that snowballs and becomes a bigger thing, and it starts to impact not only me, but my employer is dealing with that. You know, my coworkers now have to deal with that because I can't do my job anymore. It becomes a much bigger issue, right?
Does WSIB deal with anything mental health related, or is it all physical?
So mental health related things have probably become the number one issue that we're dealing with recently. We've seen a lot of it, obviously, in the news. We've seen a lot of those issues raise their head related to emergency responders who deal with very traumatic, kind of stressful situations, and as a result of that, may not be able to work and put in a claim with WSIB saying, you know, I'm not able to do my regular job because of the mental stress that I'm dealing with. And so those kind of issues are becoming more and more prevalent for us as people become more aware of it. As we all learn more about those issues and realize that, hey, maybe personally I'm dealing with that type of situation, you know, as we become aware of stuff and we go, I think maybe that's related to my job, something that I'm exposed to in my job, either, you know, from a long-term exposure where every day I'm dealing with something that's extremely stressful in my workplace, or from a traumatic experience that I'm having, then I start to go, hey, why am I dealing with this? Why do I have to deal with this on a day-to-day basis? And so WSIB is, we're faced with that challenge. It is challenging. And it's also challenging from the perspective that we don't generally know a lot about it. Like, you know, as individuals, we don't really understand it. So for employers to manage those issues, you know, it's much easier. That's not the right terminology. We're better qualified and capable of dealing with physical injuries because we sort of understand them.
Yeah.
We understand if your elbow's sore and the doctor says you can't lift something, that, you know, you have some limitations on what you can do. That's pretty straightforward. And as an employer, you can kind of deal with that. But when we start getting into the mental health related things, we don't understand them ourselves. Our employer doesn't understand them. They're complex issues. There's a lot of different factors involved, and they become very challenging for employers to try to manage and deal with, because it's something we just don't understand.
Yeah.
And so what happens when we don't understand something? We try to avoid it, right? So you kind of go, oh, I don't want to deal with that because I don't really understand it. So instead of working with people to try to help facilitate getting them back to work or offering them appropriate work or working with people to kind of resolve these situations, what do? We say, well, I don't really understand what's going on with you. You better stay home.
Sure.
Right? And that's probably not the most productive, but that's what happens because we don't really understand it that well.
Sure.
So I think there's a long way to go there to educate not only ourselves, but ourselves as employers to how to better deal with these situations to, first of all, prevent them. If we're doing something that is causing mental stress on our employees, or we're putting them in situations that are traumatic, that are leading to kind of anxiety and stress and mental health related things, we also need to understand that a lot of us are dealing with mental health issues in our lives.
Sure.
And that work can aggravate that or exacerbate that or lead to triggering issues that we have. So I think there's a lot more education that needs to be done,
sure,
and a lot more learning that employers need to do to really understand those issues instead of shying away from it, which I think a lot of them are doing right now just because of the complexity of it.
So, sure. Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I just, looking at our time here, checking your sheet, you shared some really cool stats with us before we recorded, and I would love to share those with our listeners, because I think it, at first people might think, well, what's this have to do with my business? And I think it has surprisingly a lot to do with our business. So let's talk about some of that.
People don't kind of think about businesses in Ontario and how big Ontario is, or how kind of where we focus on our own world. So WSIB covers not every business in Ontario is required to be registered with WSIB. Some of them are mandatory coverage. Some of them are what we call optional coverage, where you can choose to be covered by WSIB. Hmm. And some of them are not covered by WSIB at all.
Yeah, like my business, I'm a sole proprietor, and the nature of what I do, I can't even get it if I want.
I'm sitting here sweating. I'm like, am I obligated to be there? I have no idea. No,
you would have
Do you want to ask?
You would have did a quiz when you registered it.
I have no idea. Yeah.
So in all likelihood, the type of business that you do, you're not required to. You might be one of those businesses that could opt into WSIB if you chose to do that. And I always talk to businesses, understand yourself. You understand what you do to ensure that you have appropriate coverage. If you're required to have WSIB, make sure you're doing the right thing and paying and doing, you know, that you're covered appropriately for, so that your employees, if they have an injury. If it's an optional situation, then make sure you either have WSIB or you have some other insurance. You want to be covered. You want to protect yourself, right? So out of those businesses that are required to and opt into it, there's 307,000 companies in Ontario that are registered with WSIB. So I asked the question, so how many of those do you think are in the city of Kawartha Lakes? Because Ontario's big. There's a lot of companies. And obviously the focus of businesses is in GTA and, you know, Ottawa in the east, kind of London, Windsor, some other metropolitan areas as we go around the province. City of Kawartha Lakes is relatively small, population-wise, spread out, not a lot of large metropolitan areas. Mm-hmm. So about 1,500 businesses that are registered with WSIB in the city of Kawartha Lakes.
That seems like nothing.
It doesn't seem like very much, does
it? No.
When you start thinking about it, kind of like how many businesses are in Lindsay, how many businesses are in, you know, kind of if you looked at it, okay, maybe it does make sense, like, you know. And then we will start looking at kind of what's the makeup of those businesses.
Mm.
The majority of them have less than 50 people. And I kind of go, okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, about 98% of businesses have less than 50 people. But when you start looking at how many of them are considered to be micro, how many of those businesses have five or less, 70% of the businesses in the city of Kawartha Lakes registered with WSIB have five or less employees.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are less likely to invest in health and safety for all of the things that we've talked about, right? The bigger businesses tend to have resources and time and money and stuff, that so making those investments are perhaps a little bit easier. The micro businesses are challenged by it. So then we start breaking it down and say, okay, so how many of those, say, 1,500 businesses are in the construction sector? You might be surprised, almost half of them. 730 some out of the 1,500 are in the construction sector. And that makes up all kinds of contractors and businesses that we classify as construction. And then retail would be the next kind of chunk, about 160 businesses in retail. So we start breaking that down to understand it. And I use this information to try to kind of figure out kind of where the issues are, where I can help people to say, okay, if there's 700 and some construction businesses in the city of Kawartha Lakes, what can I do to kind of market to those construction businesses to let them know that there are resources out there where they, if they want to learn about health and safety, they can either come and listen to me talk, or I can send them out information to learn more about what their, you know, obligations are and how to make improvements. I broke down some of the stats. I was just kind of interested myself because I didn't really know. So In 2022, 110 of those, so out of the 1,500 businesses, 110 of those businesses actually registered a claim with WSIB. So two, and that resulted in actually 202 claims where people lost time from work. So in the city of Kawartha Lakes, there was 202 people that had a claim with WSIB in 2022, and 1,240 days of work were lost. So we paid out 1,240 days worth of benefits. So, you know, you kind of look at that and go, oh, it's not that much. Well, that means, you know, somebody was hurt for 1,240 days in 2022.
Yeah. Enough to make the claim, because I think a lot of minor things
never get to that
they
point.
They just never get to that point, right? And right. You think of all the, like, you know, I just think about all the slowdowns, the easily preventable things that just, you know,
yeah,
someone rolls their ankle on something that someone left out and now they're limping around and a 4-day job takes 5 or 6 days
right,
now
yeah,
because of that.
So it never gets to the WSIB involvement.
Yeah.
But it impacts your ability to be successful in your business or for your business to actually be profitable. Because if you quoted that job,
yeah, for 4 days,
and for 4 days
six,
and it takes six, then
bye-bye profit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't really think about those things too much until we're impacted by them, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, as the owner of the business, you look back and you kind of go, well, why did that job take 6 days? Like, I didn't make any money on that job. Oh, it's because Matt got hurt,
yeah,
and we couldn't get the job done in time. It's like, well, what could we have done differently? Well, if we had prevented Matt from getting hurt in the first place, we could have done it on schedule, you know, ended up in a profitable situation. So, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff that we don't think about. We don't give it maybe enough consideration when we're looking at kind of the things we do on a day-to-day basis to make our businesses successful.
Yeah, this always reminds me of a friend whose family has a construction company. It's intentionally small. They build high quality stuff. They've had the same crew forever. And they're always complaining about health and safety, but they're also, I think, probably the masters at executing their procedures. They have checklists everywhere. I remember when he was young, his job was cleaning and organizing stuff all the time because his dad didn't want anyone to get hurt. And when you watch that crew work, they're like the calmest people. Mm. They're nice and neatly organized. Everything's safe. And so they're always complaining about this stuff. But I'm like, but also you document stuff, you have a culture of safety. Like, but that's what it looks like. And then they've been this great prof. Like, they're to me an example of a really good small business, consistently profitable. They've made decent money and they've stuck to their same core things for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not losing people. They have all these now older people who they work longer because they like what they do, but they're not so worn out that they have to retire. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, just the types of things that, you know, the companies want to model, and that's what you should be shooting for.
We talk about this concept of culture, right? And so we talk about from a health and safety perspective of the health and safety culture and having a good health and safety culture versus having a poor health and safety culture. And we certainly saw this impact. So when COVID happened and the government said, you need to follow all these different things, masking, social distancing, sanitizing, all these things, right? There was early adopters and slow adopters to these things. And we started looking back and saying, well, what was the difference? What was the impact of the early adopters versus the slow adopters? So the early adopters, we saw a positive impact on their health and safety culture. Their employees said, oh, my company's reacting. They're concerned about me. They're taking the right steps. They're doing what they need to do. So we saw positive impacts there. Higher retention, keeping better people, ability to hire people, more productivity, better quality, all of these things that are positive outcomes from having a good workplace culture. What happened to the businesses that were kind of the slow adopters and said, yeah, it's going to blow over, don't worry about it. people left because they thought, well, I'm not sure whether my business actually cares about me or whether my business is safe. You know, I'm talking to my friends, grass is greener on the other side. I'm talking to other people that, you know, are working in businesses that are doing things that look like they're a lot safer. Sure. So that negative workplace culture had a negative impact on that company's ability to keep people, hire people, be productive. People maybe were still coming to work, but they're like, I'm not working any harder than I have to because my company doesn't really care about me. You know, so quality, productivity were all impacted. So, you know, making those investments in health and safety can create that more positive work environment where people want to be productive. They want to come to work. They want to do the right thing. You know, you were saying about, you know, this company, they were always complaining about safety. Not always complaining.
Yeah.
That wasn't what they did all day long. But
I think it was more the rules and the oversight.
Right.
They did.
Sure.
But what that says to me is they're aware of it. They're thinking about it. It's part of the day-to-day discussion. They might see it as a kind of, it's like, this is an annoyance or another thing that we have to do. But they're aware of it.
Yeah.
They're thinking about it, right? So that's important.
Which is cool. Awesome. This has been a great conversation to kind of wrap it all up. What's how do people find out more about what you do? What's your kind of number one recommendation?
So I think people need to educate themselves, educate their business. They can either contact me. My role is to work with companies to point them in the right direction, to give them the guidance and assistance. I'm not going to answer all their problems for them, but I'm going to help them find the answers to their questions, find the answers to kind of what they need to have. I certainly encourage people to go on like the Ministry of Labor, Immigration, Training, Skills Development website, search small business. Don't start scrolling through the page. Just go in the search box, search for small business, and it'll lead you to some really key things, guidance for small businesses. There's also other organizations called health and safety associations. I can help point them to those associations that can give them guidance and support and learn things about, you know, what they want to do. So if somebody wants to get a hold of me, probably the best way is to shoot me an email, john_carr@wsib.on.ca. Shoot me an email and I can give you a call, or we can Teams or Zoom or however you want to chat. And we can point you in the right direction and get your journey started.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to be on the podcast, you can send us an email to set it up at coworthasmallbusinesspodcast.ca.